Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to hour number two of the fastest 2 hours in talk radio. It's the Vinny Eastwood Show on thevinnyeastwoodshow.com. That's Vinny with a Y, because it's the most important question. And Eastwood isn't go ahead, make my news. Now, my very special guest is Julian Crawford from the ALCP, not to be confused with the ALLCP. Or was it the African American Defense Coalition? That's not you guys, is it? Anyway, in their defense, synthetics, that's what we're talking about here. It's my argument, and I wanted to get your take on this, Julian, as well. There's two elements to this equation. Number one, I see, ironically, people out there not protesting to legalize cannabis, but to ban synthetic alternatives to cannabis, which they would smoke anyway. And the other side is, if you wanted the synthetic cannabis to go away, you could just legalize regular cannabis, because why would people buy the fake thing when they can grow the real thing for free?
That's right. Yeah, I absolutely agree that we're seeing all these protests of people wanting to ban them and, get rid of synthetic cannabis by dealing with the supply side. But it's really the demand that could be tackled if we legalise natural cannabis.
What if ALCP sort of coalition with these people and you can have a combined platform, ban synthetics by legalising weed?
Yeah, I mean, we encourage people who are in this ban synthetics lobby to actually vote for legalising weed, because that's going to take the majority of demand away from them. The only reason that people are buying synthetic cannabis in the first place is because they want something that mimics cannabis without actually having to break the law. You know, a lot of people, like to be able to buy it legally. There's obviously a lot of popularity for the stuff.
Well, here's the other unfortunate business. What about those poor people who work for a living and get piss tested regularly, who can't do it, even if it's their birthday?
Well, that's what we're hearing, that a lot of people have moved from natural cannabis to synthetics so they can avoid workplace drug testing. You know, that's, if you're smoking the natural stuff, you can lose your job. But if you go and smoke this synthetic stuff that's more harmful, you're going to be able to pass the drug test. And
Also, I've heard an element has actually given to pure methamphetamine use, because it's only detectable in the body system for a number of days or something.
Well, cannabis is going to stay in your system for up to a month, but most hard drugs are going to pass through within a few days. So it really is the natural cannabis users that are most disadvantaged by workplace drug testing.
Well, and cannabis users are the majority of illegal drug users, am I correct? In the United States, what was it? Heard a statistic, 96 or 2006? I forget. They said something like 87% of illegal drug users only use cannabis. And it occurred to me a very important thought. The only reason why harder drugs are actually available really at all is because of the cannabis illegality to a large degree, because you get people in, everybody smokes weed, and you go, oh, bro, I'm getting some pills next week. Oh, really? Sweet as, man, you know?
Yeah. And I mean, when young people are getting told that cannabis is really bad and then they find out for themselves that they were lied to about cannabis, they might go on to the next drug and think, oh, this is going to be harmless as well, and not realise that these other drugs are quite dangerous.
Which is why government needs to regulate education about drug use. I mean, I don't think an entire prohibitionist society view of drug use is a good idea. I think that a safety and responsibility view of drug use. Are you doing too much? Lay back on that stuff, brother. Here's a support program. Or are you too young? That stuff's going to mess you up for life, mate. Wait a few years. These kind of approaches.
Well, it's interesting to compare the education on drugs with sexual education, because we don't have schools telling the kids just to abstain from sex and just never try it. You know, they're saying at some point you're going to be doing it, you need to know what it's all about. They should have the same approach to drugs. They shouldn't say just never do drugs. They should say, well, there's a good chance that you're going to try drugs. So if you do, this is the safest way to do it. And these are the safest ones to try. There's no point pretending that an abstinence model of education is going to be any use these days.
Yeah, see, me personally, I thought something that would actually be really good to help curb the drinking culture in this country is to actually teach kids how to drink at school, like responsibly. Like, you know how you got like a 50-minute period or something? During that, you actually learn what alcohol is, what effects it has on the body, and you do a taste testing on that day of a wine or a beer or something.
Yeah, I mean, we know that other countries over in Europe and stuff have much more responsible drinking cultures, and they let children drink a small amount of alcohol from a young age. Whereas here we seem to have this culture of binge drinking that once you get to a certain age, you're expected to just go out and get blind drunk. And it's basically, you know, condoned by people's parents to go and get wasted on alcohol. But, you know, there's, you know, a lot of safer substances out there than alcohol, but they're banned. It's just a crazy situation to be in.
And it's the problem as well, is because people then hear a conversation like this and it's like, oh my God, you want to give alcohol and drugs to kids? No, we're not saying that. We're saying if you actually want people to grow up in a society where they don't overdo it, and if they do, everybody else pulls them up about it and helps them to get better, then this is the approach you have to take. Unfortunately, this is what history shows us, is that everything drives human beings to want what they can't have. So if you want people to destroy them with drugs, tell them that they can't have them.
Well, if you look over at the Netherlands, where cannabis has been legal for decades, they have actually the lowest rate of teen cannabis use because there's not that whole rebellious aspect to using it. And there's a lot of drug education where the teenagers are actually learning that it's not cool just to do drugs. You know, that you can make that choice when you're an adult, but there's very, you know, low number of teenagers in Holland using cannabis, even though it's legally available.
When it was illegal, a number of people dropped from 1 in 7 to 1 in 21. So about a third of people that used to smoke continued to smoke. And when they were asked, a lot of these respondents in the surveys, why they stopped smoking, predominantly the answer was that their social circles changed. Because smoking cannabis was no longer a criminal activity, they would no longer keep up friendships that they had to maintain just so that they would smoke cannabis together. You know, hey, bro, what's up? Yeah, let's have a joint and what have you. You do it all the time just because it's illegal. You never know when you might have some more. But when it's freely available, you realize, I don't actually have anything in common with that person.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, you shouldn't have to associate with undesirable people just to get some cannabis.
But you do from time to time.
You do what you have to do, you know, because some people, particularly with the synthetics, they're going to have a lot of withdrawal problems now that we're seeing a ban come in. And there's going to be a lot of people turning to the black market to get natural cannabis, you know, from the tinny houses. And, you know, government policy is really driving people into the black market. That's the unfortunate situation. We just wish that it could be regulated and this whole problem dealt with in the first place.
Who benefits? Who benefits from this drug war?
Well, the police certainly get a lot of funding for their drug war activities. You've got the prisons, the private prison industry, and then you've got pharmaceutical companies. We already know that pharmaceutical companies hold patents on synthetic cannabis products. Some of the products already available are owned by pharmaceutical companies.
What powers of lobbying do international interests like prisons, pharmaceutical companies, etc., have on a government?
Well, they have huge lobbying power. They, you know, will be talking directly to the ministers. We've seen the likes of Serco come in and get big government contracts for running prisons. And it's in their interests to actually have, you know, a lot of people in prison. Otherwise, they're going to go out of business. So they're going to lobby the government to keep laws in place which create lots of criminals. If you sort of take these 400,000 regular cannabis users and suddenly say they're not criminals, then you're probably going to end up with less people being in jail. So they're very powerful vested interests that we're up against. And, you know, across many industries, alcohol, tobacco, pharmaceuticals, and, you know, the list goes on.
Is it not illegal to persecute a particular sect of people for profit?
Well, you would think it would be, wouldn't you? The every time the police arrest someone for cannabis, they are stealing that person's medicine.
And those people that are being stolen from are generally Māori as well.
Yeah, yeah. We know that the war on drugs is primarily a racist policy. It was brought in initially to target Chinese when they banned opium, and they've banned cannabis to target Mexicans, Negroes, and Maori. You know, it's really, usually it's the indigenous or the ethnic populations which are being unjustly targeted by these racist laws.
Well, in terms of the racist policy, let's think about this buzzword, racism. At the end of the day, there's only one race. It's called the human race, and we're all brothers and sisters in it. That's my belief, you know. And some people don't believe that, though. They believe that some races are lesser than others, right? And this is why people don't understand it, and they don't understand the compulsion of psychopaths, because they can't think that way. They can't think with unnecessary hate, malice, and cruelty against everything that is good and wholesome and joyous. Okay? You can't think like that, can you, ladies and gentlemen? The greatest trick the devil ever pulled was convincing people he didn't exist. Now you can't even think like the devil, which means he's freaking everywhere. I see it all over the media, man. And I don't even watch the media, and the little trickles and things that I come through, it all just screams to me, it's the devil, he's trying to take over my mind, and my country, oh dear God, no. You know, that's the sort of religious connotation, but the end result is pretty much the same. There's pretty evil scumbaggery involved here, isn't it? In every sector of society, there's just no end to the scumbaggery. It's right. In the courts, it's in the media, it's, oh my God, the lawyers, the doctors, the ministers, the assistants and associates, the prime sinisters, the heads of the NGOs, these organizations, these lobby groups, the police commissioners, every single fabric of society is woven together in this psychopathic control grid of utter fractal scumbaggery that threatens to penetrate all forms of goodness in the asshole.
Yeah, yes. Well, I agree with what you're saying about the human race. We're all related to each other genetically, and that, you know, our similarities are a lot greater than our differences. So there's really no need for these racist-based politics. We don't need to have policies that, you know, really turn one race into an underclass. And just to give an example, when you watch the Olympics or the Winter Olympics, you can see that athletes from any country can win any event. That, You know, it doesn't matter whether you're Asian, African, Arab, or Caucasian. We all have very similar athletic abilities when it comes down to it. So, you know, I don't think we should be looking at the Maori as an underclass and trying to put them in prison disproportionately and, you know, trying to bring this neo-colonial approach to indigenous races. It's terrible. And, of course, you know, people have identified the problem of Maori being locked up in prison, but no one has come up with any solution apart from what we're saying, and that the cannabis issue has to be resolved before the race problems are going to be resolved.
How about the judges work on this little statistic? How about you stop being 9 times more likely to sending a Maori guy to jail than a white guy for the same crime, right? How about you have a look at the statistics about 50% of the prison population being Maori when Maori are only 15% of the population? Okay? It's targeted. It's specific. Something's being done with surgical precision here, to my mind.
Oh, yeah. And I mean, it's not just the judges in the courtroom. The fact that the police are arresting more Maori, they're targeting these races just using stereotypes to actually target people for arrest. If you're a middle, upper class white person, you're very unlikely to even be arrested for cannabis. You could just be given a warning. But if you're coming from a low socioeconomic background, you're a Maori or a Pacific Islander, you could easily just get locked up for the same offence.
Boom. You've got a willing population of slaves. And this is, I think, what it's all heading to in politics under Agenda 21 and all of these globalist advances. Basically, they want to turn human beings that are free and independent into slaves that are dependent, all right? So that it's kind of like a meat grinder. People go in one end and meat comes out the other. From cradle to grave, we all get taken care of by the state. Taken care of in the mafia sense of the word, like I'm going to take care of him.
Yeah, well, if you look at Agenda 21, it's actually all based on controlling resources and this idea that there's a scarcity of resources, so we need to control them and just allocate a little bit, and you'll only be able to drive your car on certain days of the week, and you have to use less water and all of this stuff. But when we talk about the industrial hemp industry, we're talking about creating lots of new resources. So all of a sudden, we're a threat to the idea of scarcity. We can produce biofuel from hemp, so we can keep driving our cars every day. We can, produce all of the resources we need.
May I make a point on the biofuel there? Those who've been worried about peak oil and so on and so forth have been saying that biofuel from, say, corn and whatnot is a really bad idea because it actually makes almost 10 calories of petroleum chemicals in order to produce 1 calorie of biofuel. But hemp not only doesn't need those petroleum products in order to be produced, and in a lot of ways doesn't need them to be harvested to any great extent because you can recycle the oils and what have you, but it produces 4 times as much biofuel per hectare than anything else anyway.
Yeah, I think the main concern with biofuels is that the land usage is going to be used to make fuels that could be used for making food.
With the hemp plant, it produces seeds and food and everything at the same time as producing the matter for the biofuel. So you've got everything you need in the same crop anyway. In fact, it's a multi-purpose crop. You wouldn't just be planting crops for one purpose. You could basically turn that crop into anything as much as you need for that day. Who knows? It could be prefab, made to order. Yeah.
That's right, for sure. Like, not only are you producing at least 4 times the amount of biomass of these other crops, you're producing your food and your fuel at the same time. You'd go through and harvest the seed and use the seed to make food products. And then you've got the rest of the plant, which can go into a biomass, into a composter, a digester, or into a catalytic converter where they turn the plant material into charcoal and the gases and liquid fuels get released and condensed through a distillation process. So you could literally chuck hemp into one end of a machine and have liquid fuel just dripping out the other.
You can make hemp plastics as well. On top of that, we have a inventor, Roy Harlow, who actually plays the show around the Hamilton and, in fact, across New Zealand now that come to think of it. He has invented a machine where you put plastic in one end and diesel comes out the other.
Yeah, well, we know that most of the plastic that we use today is made from diesel. It's made from these fossil fuels. So, you know, even if we stopped using our cars, we'd still need a hell of a lot of petroleum to make our plastic.
And it's not biodegradable.
No. It never biodegrades.
This is the problem. We're living in the age of oil. Everything's made of oil. Everything, you know. Or some expenditure of it. We need something to replace that. Is there enough land? Is there enough resources in all the world to actually replace just the need for oil-based products alone with cannabis? I think it'd be a good start at the very least.
Yeah, I think there is enough land in the world to replace all of the petrochemical products. And the good thing about the hemp plastic is that it will biodegrade over time. You know, after a couple of years in the landfill, it's going to biodegrade. But we can still make sturdy products that are going to be useful to us now.
We could actually build up landmass in that regard, because imagine a landfill that's with trash, like let's say excess building materials or plastic bottles and old furniture and everything like that, with every stitch and fabric and fibre and plank and everything within all of that trash that's going in as landfill is actually made from hemp, which will biodegrade. That actually becomes new land. So we'd not only be producing biomass out of the sun, but we'd actually be, in essence, in a lot of ways, creating new room to live for future generations.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's only going to revitalise the soil, having hemp products breaking down. You know, they're going to act as natural fertilisers. So what could be a landfill now could actually be turned into productive land if we stop polluting, you know, with these other products.
Well, does ALCP also have an environmental policy in terms of reducing the toxins, poisons, etc. through the food chain that we're all exposed to?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, we really like the idea of organic GE-free produce, and we want to promote more of that because we wouldn't want to smoke cannabis that was grown with heaps of chemicals, and we think the same should apply to our food, you know, these fruit and veggies. Really, we need to be getting the Roundup out of them, all of the pesticides and whatever toxic chemicals. They're a big part of the problem. And a lot of food today is grown on a mass homogenized scale. And it's ironically called the Green Revolution. But all of the fertilizer is, again, made from petroleum products.
So who controls the oil currently? Queen Beatrix of the Netherlands, Queen Elizabeth of England, David Rockefeller of America, and a few other little conglomerates in there as well. All of these people are basically the worst globalist scum that the world's ever seen. It seems to me that the human race is bound in politics, not only upon issues like the cannabis issue, but at all sides, we've been divided and conquered by a psychopathic elite who basically own our way of life. They own the products that we consume every day. They own the supply chains and they own our politicians. And it seems to me that if radical change is to happen, these influences have to be contested at the very least within the halls of parliament. I mean, is there anybody in the halls of parliament questioning the legitimacy of the Reserve Bank, which has the Rothschild family shield crest right behind its front doors?
I don't think any of the current MPs are challenging that paradigm. And it really shows who we're up against, the likes of the Rockefellers and the Rothschilds. hugely powerful influences in the world, and it comes back to people being in denial, I think, about the fact that these people are running the world. We like to believe we live in a democracy. We like to think that we can influence the government in some small way, but in reality, we are going head-to-head against these powerful players on the world scene, and we've seen them throughout the Middle East trying to control these oil reserves, and they are trying to maintain the US dollar as the reserve currency by forcing countries to trade in oil for US dollars, and they don't want anything that's going to threaten that paradigm. So the idea of producing, you know, thousands of gallons of biofuel is not going to go down too well with some of these people. So, you know, we really have to try and push ahead with the solutions, and the cannabis issue is just one example of how we've got to stand up against the Rockefellers, Rothschilds, what have you. But if we can't win this issue, then, you know, we know that our rights and freedoms have already been taken away.
Well, if you're being divided and conquered and attacked on every front by your enemy, it seems only logical to resist them in every single way possible. You know, why not legalize cannabis would be the answer. We already know the why we should. We'll be right back after the break with Julian Crawford from ALCP. Ladies and gentlemen, don't you go anywhere.
You can talk the talk, but will you walk the walk, or will you bring us comfort, or will you bring us comfort? Politician, can you make a right decision for all of us? Can you make a right decision for all of us?
Segment here of the Vinnie Eastwood Show. This episode is sponsored by the High Tea Cafe in Newland. You can check out the banner on the VinnieEastwoodShow.com. Also check out Blue Shield little EMF protection devices. They're quite lovely. And the Gourmet Soap Kitchen as well. And as always, most of the revenue, in fact, come to think of it, pretty much all the revenue to support this show comes from donations from listeners like you, ladies and gentlemen. So please go to thevinnieeastwoodshow.com and donate, or subscribe to put in a regular donation, say $5 a month or something of that nature. It just keeps all the bills paid so we can just keep interviewing all the people that the media will basically shut out. And even if they do interview them, we'll give them a couple of seconds of airtime. An audio nibble, it's not enough information to base decisions that are going to affect the future of your country, ladies and gentlemen. You can't do short form interviews with politicians, researchers, guests, and issues and expect to have a vastly more informed view. It's not possible. The show that I'm doing here is absolutely necessary for people to wake up even further than they already have. If you're not waking up, you probably won't have even found the show yet. But now that you're here, because you're listening to so many diverse voices, thoughts, ideas, and people, and accents, and subject matters, you are becoming more profoundly woken up than you may have ever been in your life. That is the reason why I do it. I do that for me. You just get to come along for the ride. If you want the ride to stop, don't donate. Right? At the moment, I'm in quite desperate financial straits, so it'd be in my best interest, maybe and yours, to give us a little bit of coin. Probably like about $1,000 within the next week would be very nice. Anyway, back to my guest. Julian Crawford has been patiently sitting in the background there. Welcome back.
Yeah, cheers for having me on the show. It's been good.
All right. I hope you've enjoyed yourself.
Yep.
Yep. Sounds real enthusiastic there. You sound like you need to go, bro.
Well, we do have a lot of events coming up that if people want to get involved in, of course, J-Day being the main one. The annual public smoke up in New Zealand throughout the country. People have had enough of the cannabis laws getting out on the street and actually just defying the law publicly. So, it's a good opportunity for people to come out and meet each other who are interested in the cannabis culture.
What are some of the details of that? Where can people get more info?
You can check out our website, alcp.org.nz, and all the main centres are holding J-Day. It's going to be in Albert Park up in Auckland, Frank Kitts Park in Wellington, Bridge of Remembrance in Christchurch, and in the Octagon in Dunedin. And that's on the 3rd of May at midday.
I find it ironic that they're going to have a Bridge of Remembrance because a whole lot of stoners won't remember it.
Well, they might not remember what it looked like before the earthquake. I think it's that part of Christchurch is still under repairs, of course.
Somebody told me once, like, I don't know whether he was serious or just joking or something, but he was talking about this research with cannabis in the brain. And what they found was that it increases your IQ with cannabis use, but it's at the expense of your short-term memory. So you would have these really brilliant thoughts, but forget that you had them.
Yeah, well, it's interesting what cannabis does to the brain is that usually when your neurons are firing, there's a short pause between the neurons firing. But when you smoke cannabis, you can actually have a continuous neuron firing, so your thoughts are running wild. But that can also cause you to sort of forget stuff that's happening around you because you are too busy thinking about something else. But having said that, people do smoke cannabis and go out and drive their cars and perform all of their usual functions. So the impairment is nowhere near what we're seeing with alcohol and other drugs.
Well, and also, I wonder what the problem is with drink driving and what have you, and all of these speeding tickets and what have you. I just think that if you've hurt somebody, you know, or if you're actually doing it dangerously and whatnot, you know, you're endangering private property, then sure, you can be pulled up. But if you're a little bit over the limit, but you're driving slowly and what have you, you make it home all right, what's the problem? I think if there's no victim, there's no crime. But people have a precautionary approach to this, which means nobody can even go out and even have so much as a drink soon enough in the future and be able to drive home. They're talking about lowering the limit, you know. So you can't even have a glass of wine with dinner out with your friends and be able to drive home.
Yeah, it's definitely going that way. I mean, it would be better if, you know, the law was based on actual harm, because with cannabis, there's no victim, there's no one actually being harmed at all, yet it's still treated as a crime. And like you say, this precautionary approach is becoming more and more common, where people are saying, oh, what if something goes wrong? We need to sort of wrap everyone in cotton wool. But it's taking away their individual responsibility at the same time.
And as a result, people become, in general, less responsible.
Yeah. And I mean, we've got this mentality that if you crash your car or something, then some insurance company's just going to pay for it. You know, it's not going to cost you out of your own pocket. And government has its own insurance schemes and ACC and all this. And a lot of it is just saying, look, the state will look after you. You don't need to be taking personal responsibility, because we don't trust you to look after yourself anyway. And slowly but surely, our rights and liberties are being taken away. You know, we're seeing that with tobacco as well, that there's a move to ban tobacco in New Zealand by 2025.
Well, first they tell you that you can't take care of yourself, and over a period of time, with progressive legislation, they make taking care of yourself illegal.
Well, they like to make the decisions for you, what's in your best interest. And, you know, we see the education system is run by the state, and, you know, they expect you to be a productive worker, and they don't see cannabis as fitting into their view of the economy, which is unfortunate, because there's a lot of professional people out there who do smoke cannabis that want to be having successful careers, and we feel like we're being discriminated against.
When was the last time there was a US president elected that hadn't had weed at some point in their life?
Oh, I just...
It might have been Nixon.
Probably, you know, because in my lifetime, most of the US presidents have admitted to smoking cannabis, you know.
I reckon they should all go to jail. Like, you know what, make it fair. Here's what would make it fair. And I've done this to a crowd of people before, Julian. Okay.
Yeah.
Raise your hand if you know somebody, anybody, that has ever used cannabis. Virtually everybody raises their hand, you know. Okay, put your hands down. Now, raise your hand if you want to see any of those people go to jail.
Yeah.
Nobody raises their hand. Unless there's like one guy. And he goes, yeah, I reckon you should be sent to jail. And this happened in front of a crowd of people too. And everybody laughed. And I go, yeah, see, now, isn't it funny, sir, that you're the only person that agrees with the law, and yet the law exists against everybody's will here to protect the people they love from the law.
Yeah, and we saw on Campbell Live the other day, they did a poll on whether people supported decriminalising cannabis for personal use. And they were really surprised when 84% were in favour of it, because it just shows that the public doesn't want cannabis prohibition. The only reason it's there is because our politicians are being dictated to by foreign interests, you know, particularly coming from the US and the United Nations. So what does that tell you about New Zealand's sovereignty? It's already non-existent if the will of the public is ignored in a democratic situation.
It's a sham marriage.
Oh, yes. I mean, they've got a lot of people, you know, out there voting these politicians in, but is it really in their best interest to be voting them back into power every 3 years? We really think that the public should look at some of the minor parties and some of the alternative options that aren't in Parliament at the moment, because we could be a lot better off.
Well, I think that the reason why democracy, i.e. in Latin translation, mob rule, is failing the mob, is because it's quite easy to control a mob using mob control techniques. All right? And I think that if the mob wants to take control of their controllers, you need direct democracy, which means every bit of legislation should be voted on by the people as it comes up. You know, we've got email, we've got Skype, we've got Facebook forums, we've got all sorts of ways for people to calibrate and get informed and put their views across to their government on a daily basis about what should be being done. Don't we? We've got the technology. Why don't we do that? Because I know for a fact that every single person I've ever looked up to in my entire life, no matter how much I idolize them, has disappointed me. Because I put across perfection that didn't exist in my thoughts about them. And because they're human, they're imperfect, and they'll always fall short of your expectations. This is the reason why I don't like the whole idea, no offense, Julian, of having politicians represent an inordinate amount of people in such of just one person's mind. Why can't everybody's mind be representation of themselves? Why can't they all have a voice? And the answer is, we're all too busy working to survive because we're being taxed too much to be able to survive and also have free time to think about stuff.
Yeah, I mean, it's crazy because you'd think that the politicians should be working for us, working for the public, but when the public states its opinion and the politicians don't like that opinion, they'll just readily ignore it. And we've seen that with a number of citizens-initiated referendums where the public has voted overwhelmingly for a certain course of action, and then the Prime Minister has just turned around and said, no, we're not going to follow that recommendation. So I guess, like you say, we need to have some sort of binding referendum if it's going to make a difference, but I doubt the government is ever going to be willing to implement binding referendums.
Well, see, even then, you come up with a situation like they've gotten, what was it, is it Sweden or Austria that has the binding referendum? But apparently, see, again, the mob mentality still persists within crowds of people. They become easily manipulated, far too easy to control. And so even with binding referenda, you'll get people manipulating the mob into voting for something that is against their interest, just the same way they always have. It's a silk hand and cased in an iron glove.
Yeah, I mean, that's the trouble these days, that you've got like television and other means of widespread manipulation of the public opinion. And I guess, you know, people have to realise that they are susceptible to having their opinion manipulated.
Hey, wouldn't that be an ironic thing to teach every child in New Zealand public schools about how authority figures tend to manipulate you? And there's an authority figure in the teacher telling them this?
Well, I think there's a deliberate agenda to actually dumb people down, because intelligent people are actually a threat to the system. And with this Agenda 21 stuff, there's this idea that if we get too rich, we're going to consume too much, that we're going to have, you know, big mansions and we're going to have five cars and all this, and that if we keep people less educated, they're less likely to become rich and they're less likely to consume lots of resources. And, you know, I think it's a scary prospect that we have a country that's deliberately being miseducated or not educated in the first place.
Well, it occurs to me that there is a way through all of this. I just don't know what it is. And so the next thing that occurs to me is, how do I cope with knowing how messed up stuff is and work against it to some degree without getting bogged down, depressed about it and what have you? Because, you know, it sometimes feels like you're playing against a rigged game.
Yeah, well, I mean, you certainly have to pick your battles when you're in politics, because if you try and, you know, fix every single problem, you're probably going to be banging your head against a brick wall and not necessarily getting anywhere. But the other thing that people can do is just work around the system and try and lead by example and just in their own private life try and achieve the way of life that they think other people should aspire to. There's plenty of ways that we could be growing the economy without hurting the environment at the same time.
You know, in fact, something occurred to me about what you were saying right there is that I'm really starting to get pretty angry at the Green Party.
Well, the Green Party, they claim to be a sort of grassroots movement representing different activist groups, and including the cannabis activists, but once these groups get absorbed into the Green movement, they sort of get neutralised and never really get represented properly, and you realise that the Greens aren't actually grassroots, they're taking their instructions from their foreign powers, and you know, I think they're every bit part of the establishment as the Labour and National Party are, so they've become very mainstream, and that's why they're willing to compromise on some of their previous principles.
And I think that's what's happened. We've come from first past the post, which is one tyrannical scumbaggery party or a different tyrannical scumbaggery party, all both financed by foreign bankers and implementing UN and World Bank agendas upon New Zealand and subjugating its people and destroying its economy and eroding our freedoms. And now with MMP, we have evolved into a three-plus party state, with the three main parties being the exact same, more or less, in every way. You read their environment policy of the Greens, Labour, and National. All the words are pretty much lifted from Agenda 21. It's the same freaking thing. All these guys are the three main parties. These are what I'm thinking. Like the other rogue elements, you know, Mana and New Zealand First. I think New Zealand First has been rogue from day one.
Yeah.
Winston, I love him. It was the reason I voted for this Winston in the last election, mind you, Julian, is because he called the earthquake recovery minister the corpulent Jerry Brownlee. He called him an illiterate woodshop teacher.
Yeah.
It was the first time he got kicked out of the house after being elected back into it.
You've got to love Winston and stuff, but it's interesting that you say that the National Party is going down the same road as these left-wing parties, and we've seen Jerry Brownlee bring in what I would consider fascist legislation in Christchurch, where he's allowed to suspend any New Zealand law except the Bill of Rights when it comes to rebuilding Christchurch, and that, you know, with the rebuild in Christchurch, we're seeing all of these internationalist principles being applied in the Christchurch CBD rebuild. You know, the likes of smart meters on every house and, you know, cameras everywhere and biometrics.
Really? So they're going to turn this into the little prison city, are they? Because I've just heard rumblings, I know we're pressed for time and you need to go, that we're going to basically have our two megacities, like under Agenda 21, more or less, the settlement for human habitation will be in settlement zones, like there's little dots on the map. Everything else, more or less, is off limits or highly restricted to human activity. So that'll be more or less the whole country, except for more or less Christchurch and Auckland, right? Everything else will be off limits. This is over time, of course.
Yeah, it's obviously going to be brought in over time, but gradually they're moving more and more people to live in urban areas, and we've heard that the mayor of Auckland wants to double the population of Auckland to at least 2 million people, but within the same existing boundaries of the CBD. They don't want to expand the city outwards, they just want to have more people living within a confined space, and I can't really understand it myself that they think that if people live in the cities and just walk everywhere, then there's going to be less environmental problems. But I would have thought that having people living on lifestyle blocks out in the bush, growing a bit of fruit and veggies and hemp, that would be more environmentally friendly than living in the city. But they're worried that people are going to commute from the countryside to the city too often, so they don't want people living out in remote areas.
And so they'll eventually make living in those remote areas illegal. Sorry, eminent domain, or something that sounds like that. The government's going to preeminently acquire your land that you've been living on for generations and what have you, and now you have to go and live in a slave block. 140 square feet of apartment. 140 square feet? That's like a 1.5 bedroom apartment. I've got 4 kids. I know. Sorry, mate. Regulations. You're going to have to work it out somehow. Maybe your youngest can sleep on the dish rack.
Yeah, well, let's hope it doesn't get too bad. But, you know, the government is going down a dangerous path that, you know, could be quite a concern in the future.
I think it'd be hilarious, you know. It'd be like Judge Dredd. Be fantastic, you know. Incidentally, under the food bill, and I know you got to go. We'll be off here in a second. In the food bill, there's actually provisions where armed private security can come onto your property, confiscate your vegetables if they're not like food bill approved and what have you. You know, like if they're heirloom. Heirloom, non-genetically modified, non-Monsanto, you know? And not only can they be armed, but they're also, and here's the kicker, immune from any form of criminal prosecution.
Oh, it's crazy, isn't it? I mean, we know that in New Zealand, the food authorities have already signed up for what's called Codex Alimentarius, which is just a, you know, a huge register of what will and won't be allowed. And, the New Zealand food authorities have also basically merged their systems with the FDA in the US, that New Zealand recognises everything that the Food and Drug Administration is saying, and it's part of our system. And these same food authorities are maintaining a ban on hemp food at the moment. They've removed all the hemp food from the shelves because the Australian authorities are still concerned about whether there might be THC in hemp food, even though there is none in it.
There's even THC in breast milk, and a woman was actually arrested because they because they found some of her breast milk had THC in it.
I was amazed that that woman actually pleaded guilty, because it would have been a good court case to say not guilty, Your Honour. You know, that was, you know, there's no proof that the baby was getting high.
I fed my baby, but I didn't feed it from my left breast. Okay, thank you very much, Julian Crawford. Final words of encouragement, wisdom let's say really disillusioned stoners out there who can't even be bothered getting off of their ass and voting ALCP. I've known a few of these people. It's disgusting.
Yeah, well, firstly, just want to thank you for having me on the show, Vinny. It's been a pleasure, and I just think that the election is a really big opportunity, and if people out there are just thinking they can't be bothered voting, then that's actually just making it easier for the current Prime Minister to stay in power. The current government will be able to stay in power with less votes if there's a low turnout, so I encourage you to get out there and vote, and if you're so disillusioned with all these other parties, why not just give your vote to the Aotearoa Legalised Cannabis Party? Because we're not following the same agenda as these parties. We're actively opposing what they're doing. So we support anyone who is disillusioned with politicians. And we've just got ordinary New Zealanders who are standing up to be our candidates. And we definitely are serious about getting into Parliament. So if we can get 5% of the party vote nationwide, we could end up with 5% of the MPs Parliament. So I'd encourage people to get on the roll to vote, and, you know, try and use democracy to change things for the better, because if you don't vote, then things are probably just going to get worse.
Indeed. We'll see you again sometime, ladies and gentlemen.